So it's quite nice as we arrive for a talk to settle into that space of listening that we've been already practicing with in the retreat. So we're not exactly like the very deep inward space of meditation, but there's this sense of uprightness, listening, settledness, which sometimes helps us to hear things in a different way. Notice. So I have a very bad habit in conversation of sometimes going too fast. So I think I know what the other person is saying, and Noon's very good at reminding me to wait until he's finished speaking, because there's just that speediness of mind that is going ahead. And there's something about the practice of meditation and listening in this meditative way that helps me, and I think it helps other people also, to open to maybe just hear the resonances of things in the body or from a part of the mind that we don't usually access, we don't access so often. So it's a kind of magical process that can happen sometimes just with our way of listening, opening, that is part of the practice of meditation, and then it spreads out into how we're listening in the rest of life. And so I wanted to say a little bit this afternoon around some different themes. So the title of the retreat, as it was changed, is still similar to what Suvacho was offering, but it's called Listening Within the Heart. And I found there's a Celtic Irish philosopher poet who I really enjoy reading called John O'Donohue, who has died now. But I have this lovely quote from him that I thought I'd like to start with, and then see where things go from there. And it touches very much for this theme of how we're listening inside and where we're listening from. And it's from his book, which is called Anamkara. There is a beautiful complexity of growth within the human soul. In order to glimpse this, it is helpful to visualize the mind as a tower of windows. Many people remain trapped at the one window, looking out every day at the same scene in the same way. Real growth is experienced when you draw back from that one window, turn and walk around the inner tower of the soul and see all the different windows that await your gaze. Through these different windows, you can see new vistas of possibility, presence, and creativity. Complacency, habit, and blindness often prevent you from feeling your life. So much depends on the frame of vision, the window through which you look. Would you like me to read it again, or was that enough? Yes, again, okay. There is a beautiful complexity of growth within the human soul. In order to glimpse this, it is helpful to visualize the mind as a tower of windows. Many people remain trapped at the one window, looking out every day at the same scene in the same way. Real growth is experienced when you draw back from that one window, turn and walk around the inner tower of the soul, and see all the different windows that await your gaze. Through these different windows, you can see new vistas of possibility, presence, and creativity. Complacency, habit, and blindness often prevent you from feeling life. So much depends on the frame of vision, the window through which you look. So we'll make sure that that goes onto the notice board for you to be able to read. and what I really, for me, what I sense in that reading is this possibility we have to see our lives differently, which the Buddha also talked about. So the practice of insight, of learning to see our lives differently. And this, the theme of the retreat of learning to listen deeply within our heart is also touching on that process of how we come out of our habits, our personality, our habitual ways of relating, the way that society teaches us to relate, where there can be a lot of suffering in that layer of our being. And it isn't that we actually need to necessarily make all of that go away. But when we start to feel it from a different place in ourselves, from a clearer, more open, more grounded place in ourselves, for me in meditation practice, that helps to see the same patterns differently. To start to see, to be able to see clearly, oh, this sensation leads to that thought, leads to that behavior. Is that harmful or is it for well-being? And in this way, we start to be able to feel out what we're actually holding in our being and release some of the suffering that we can experience. But this can be a very mysterious, slow, quiet process of allowing ourselves to open. And so as Noon mentioned this morning, one of the things that we can often struggle with when we come to meditation is that our society, it conditions us to think that we need to be attaining something, we need to be getting somewhere, we need to be succeeding, we need to be good at meditation. There's the comparing mind that can come in. I'm sure, so like, we might be sitting here thinking, I'm sure everybody else is a really good meditator and I don't know what I'm doing and look, I'm struggling. And it's so common, that experience when we come to meditation. And what I find really beautiful in practice is the very thing that is that we don't have to make those things go away in order to transform them. We just need to see them for what they are. And so in the Buddhist scriptures, the Buddha is in his process of enlightenment. He comes across many difficulties, many obstacles, etc. And there's this personification of the darker forces, let's say, called Mara. And I find it really beautiful that often when the Buddha is struggling like this, when he has a breakthrough, when he wakes up, he doesn't actually do anything different. He just says, I see you, Mara. I see you. So sometimes you have these dialogues where the Buddha's like talking with this Mara, who's the personification of evil or darkness. The Buddha's having this conversation and he doesn't fight. In the end, he just says, I see you, Mara. I see you. And then and then there's a lovely phrase. It says, so Mara sad and dejected, kind of with his head down, or sad and dejected, walks away because he's been seen. So sometimes when we have things arising in meditation, We just need to be able to see and hold it from a deeper place in ourselves. And so some of the tools that we've been teaching already, which come from the early teachings in Buddhism on coming into the body as a practice, they are the reason that we're teaching those things is because they help us to come back to a part of our being that is not so caught in the habit mind. So we've been exploring the sense of contact with the earth, the grounding in the body, which is much slower, is much more rhythmic, is very alive actually, is still and yet is flowing. And the reason that Noon and I both emphasize so much, and why I emphasize this so much, and why it's emphasized so much in the first foundation of mindfulness, is that it gives us a much more settled place, a much more connected place in our being, from where we can start to notice the movements of the mind. The mind that is pulling us to achieve, the mind that is sleepy, the mind that is angry, the mind that is sad. When we can stay in touch with this very much slower contact with the body, the connectedness of the body, the fact that we're part of a bigger picture, this body is nourished by the earth, held by the earth, we're welcome. That's a very, very different place in our being than when we're, this is me and I'm my little life and I need to achieve this or I need to get that or I need to sort this out. It just helps us to start to see those things from a much slower, deeper, more spacious, more connected place. Where we can acknowledge our vulnerability, our body is vulnerable. But it's also in its vulnerability, it's alive. And so we come to a more real contact with ourselves. We're not defending against our vulnerability. We're tuning into the aliveness of our being. And in doing this, in starting to listen, for instance, just to something as simple as our body sitting, as the contact with the earth, as the rhythm of the breath, we might feel, well, that's all very well, but how does that actually help anything? But what we're doing actually when we start to give priority and listening to this slower, more grounded place in ourselves is we're showing our habit mind that we're not disempowered. We don't have to always get caught in our habits, in our thinking. We can listen to this more rooted place in our being and we can take refuge there. So this is something I wanted to speak about, this sense of taking refuge as a image and as a movement of where do we find shelter? Where do we find safety in our being? So in classical Buddhism, there's this phrase, taking refuge, and it's said that when you take refuge, you officially become a Buddhist because you take refuge in Buddha, which the historical Buddha or the sense of awakeness, in Dharma, the teachings, and in Sangha. And so all of that can sound quite formulaic and quite distant from, well, what has that got to do with practice? But I think for me, if I look at my daily life, I notice that when I start to suffer or when I meet something that I don't like, then often I do seek to take shelter. I seek to turn away from that thing sometimes, and I distract myself, for instance. That's how we can habitually function. We meet something we don't like. So we have a difficult conversation or whatever. And we choose or we react in a way that we just hide. We take refuge in something, we take shelter in something that we're not particularly aware of. So it might be we immediately pick up the telephone and go onto Facebook. Or it might be that we eat something. I don't feel very good, so I'll make myself feel better by eating something or by not eating something or by listening to some music or by turning the television on. So we have a lot of digital stimulus in our day where we can very easily get away from what is uncomfortable. And we don't notice that we're using those things as a way of sheltering ourselves, of getting away from the uncomfortable. And the difficulty with this one, as we all know, I'm sure you all know it, when this is an unconscious process, is then we just do it more and more and more. Because we've never actually faced the difficulty, the difficult feeling, the difficult experience, what we're afraid of. We've never actually faced up to those things. We turn away from them and take shelter in something that temporarily makes us feel better, but doesn't really nourish us because we're not grounded and we're not really aware of what is happening. And so actually on a daily level, we're taking refuge in something. So let me think. Yeah, it can be like, for me, I eat chocolate. If I'm feeling really emotional, I start eating chocolate, for instance. Or I can be very speedy also. So I'm like, I have a feeling I need to get away. I need to run. Boom. And so I get it. And if I'm doing that from an unconscious place, it doesn't actually resolve anything. If I'm doing it from a conscious place of, I feel really, really agitated and I need to move this energy, and so I'm going to go. But consciously, that's a different thing. It's a different thing. So there's nothing necessarily right or wrong, but it's like where we choose to take refuge. And so this structure that is offered in Buddhism, I find actually it has a lot of insight in it and a lot of potential for us to start to become aware in our lives through where we choose to take shelter when we meet something difficult or we meet even a strong desire. We meet the push and the pulls that we experience in daily life. And instead of either going with them or hiding from them, we can choose to take refuge in awareness, for instance, in presence, which is the very first refuge in Buddhism. So, as I said before, the three classical refuges are Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and that can sound very far away. But Buddha, so if we think about the first refuge of Buddha, so he was a historical person who went through a process of learning to practice. And we can choose it if that is something that's resonant for us. It's not a necessity, but we can, for me, sometimes it's really inspiring to think there is this person, this human being, who was not so different from any of us, who struggled, who learns that in life there is suffering through clinging to what we want or what we don't want, we suffer. And so he learnt about a path of how we can liberate ourselves from suffering. Sometimes it's really inspiring to think about, oh, this is some beings have actually trodden a path where they've recognized freedom in life. And when I think about the example of the historical Buddha, and there are many things that are inspiring in that example, which help to recognize that this path of freedom is not so far away. So, for instance, so it's said in the teachings, when the Buddha really started to understand about awakening, he came away from concepts and conceptual thought and remembered just sitting at the root of a tree as a child. And this was the very start of his awakening process. So for me, that's a real reminder that our awakening is not so far away. And I can lean into that reminder that maybe it's okay to just sit and explore what it's like to be in a body with a mind, with a heart, present in this moment. And that this in itself is part of awakening. This gentleness, this letting ourselves lean at the root of a tree, sit at the root of a tree, connected, part of nature. And as his awakening process went on, and, you know, he had all sorts of kind of cosmic experiences and this and that, so it said, but then when he actually awoke, he touched the earth as his witness. And that for me is another really inspiring thing, because it's like our awakening is here. Our presence. So awakening can sound a big word, but our capacity to be present and awake and aware is right here in this body as it's sitting right here now. Or every single one of us, we have this capacity for awakeness, capacity to lean into the refuge of that which is awake, aware within us. So we don't have to even take the example of the historical Buddha when we sense into this leaning into Buddha. It can also literally just mean that which is awake and aware, our presence, the light of our consciousness. And one of the things I'm very grateful for to one of my teachers, Ajahn Sumedho, is that he very much emphasized noticing our awareness. So this different window that we can look through. We usually look through the windows of our habits. So I'm a person like this, this fear feels like this, and I always react to it in this way. Whereas when we start to trust into our awareness or our presence to be able to say, hold a fear, be aware of it without being caught in it, we're looking for a very different window in our being. And Ajahn Sumedho very much emphasized that this awareness is here all of the time. So without it, you wouldn't be able to understand my voice. You wouldn't be able to press the Zoom link to be able to get onto the Zoom. It's like what is intelligent, awake, aware in us is helping us to function all of the time. And we just don't notice it. We don't notice our own awareness. So when we do start to practice in meditation, we can start to turn attention towards what is it that knows within me? What is it that's hearing my voice? What is it that's pointing at the screen right now? And that's in you seeing my finger pointing. That's awareness that's noticing that. And it's not so far away. And so for me, this movement of taking refuge in awareness is a very immediate thing that we can learn to do. So when faced with a fear or when faced with a desire, instead of just immediately falling into a reaction, we can start to notice this is what is happening. And that pauses the whole reaction process and helps us to see differently, to respond differently. And this is, in some way, we can say formally it's taking refuge in Buddha, but it's more like when we faced with something, when we meet something, we are choosing to lean into awareness as our support rather than distraction, rather than judgment. So we're catching the process and we're choosing where we want to sit to meet that process from. We're choosing what we want to lean into as a support, as our refuge, as our safety. So does that make some sense? A few nods. Good. So there's Buddha. I mean, and we could explore these, all of them, for a long time. So I'm condensing it a little bit. But and then Dharma, which again, classically in Buddhism, that word Dharma can mean the body of teachings that was left by the Buddha. But they are not, whatever teachings we have, it's very clear, the Buddha expressed very clearly that they're not dogmas. So Dharma, if we look at Dharma as in terms of the body of teachings that we have to practice with, they're not dogmas. Whatever teachings we have that are said to have been given by the Buddha, they are tools to explore. To explore our being, to explore what is awake within us, to explore what qualities we have that we might not notice when we're just caught in our personality and our habits, when we're looking out the little window of this is who I am, and I always relate. That's quite a good image, actually. We're looking only from this very surface part of our being. And when we start to explore what Dharma means and how we lean into that, it gives us a whole kind of, like when you're painting, you have a palette with lots of different colors. It gives us all these other possibilities that we might start to notice in our being as qualities that are already here. So we've started to touch into that through exploring the body. We've started to notice there might be more calm, there might be stability, there might be a different way of knowing that comes from our body. The Buddha also talked about, I mean, there's so many teachings, but curiosity is a really important factor that we can explore. We can start to notice my heart actually is really curious. It wants to know what it is to be alive, to not be just stuck in my habits. Or kindness, compassion, equanimity, joy. Those are a connected set of teachings that you can go, well, those are teachings that I should cultivate. Or we can start to notice our heart naturally has a certain level of kindness, of listening, of connection and joy, and of capacity to see what is happening. These things are natural qualities that are naturally here. And so when we say, okay, I'm leaning into, I'm taking refuge in the Dharma, it's like this, okay, well, I'm looking into these different aspects of being. How is it if I start to explore my being in this way, to notice if there's kindness in my heart, and I start to treat what is happening within me, around me, from that place of listening, from that place of kindness, or strength, or curiosity. We start to see ourselves a bit like a musical instrument, that we can notice when we're imbalanced, and what do I need to tune into at this moment? It might be energy, it might be calm, it might be that we notice that there's a wisdom that's arising within us. Like most of us in our conditioned society would go, oh no, not wisdom, you know, or I'm so wise. We'd go to one or other of the extreme. Whereas when we're sitting in meditation, we can start to notice that there's a capacity to be aware and to respond within us with wisdom that is not really personal. It's not really my personality that's doing it. We're tuning into a deeper wisdom within us. And as we're doing that, we're leaning into the Dharma. We're leaning into just what is more open, curious, and deep within us, these deeper realities. So another translation of Dharma is how things are, reality. That we're learning to lean into and explore. Another way of translating it is nature, which is also very beautiful. So that we're not actually fabricating anything as we start to explore the Dharma. We're learning to discover what is already here in our heart. So kindness is naturally here, curiosity, stability. And sometimes our habit or our personality mind doesn't know those things. We get caught in that level. And so in meditation and with taking refuge, we're just learning to listen and to tune back into these other qualities of being as a support for us to grow and to see through these different windows that we have and deepen. So yeah, it's like we're learning to listen into the deeper supports that are already available for us. And sometimes we need to practice that a lot. So this is why we have guided meditations. This is why we come to formal practice of meditation, because sometimes it takes a lot of patience and gentleness and listening to make our habits, to make space for our fears, our desires. All of that is still here, but there's a much ocean of being that is underneath that. And in meditation, it's like we're learning to rest into that deeperness that can then hold the waves from a very different place. This is taking refuge, really, finding where we shelter in our being. And then the third refuge classically is said to be Sangha. Or community. And I think this is also really, it can be a very, very profound support for our practice and for learning to let ourselves see and be differently. So on a very immediate level, it can mean like the community of practitioners who we are with, so like all of us. Or maybe you have your own communities, your own sanghas where you practice meditation. And so as I'm sure you know, the value of coming together in a group of people who have a similar intention of, like in this retreat, of listening, of deepening, of opening to what is more true within ourselves. It's like that sense of community can create a container where we feel safe to explore. It can create a resonance where somehow, if we're practicing alone, sometimes with our own intention, that's really important. But sometimes coming together or noticing that we're connected as part of a group of people can kind of help the strength of that intention. It can help us to open and deepen and resonate in ways that sometimes we can't do alone, or it's harder to do alone. And so for myself, for instance, I started practicing meditation in my teens, and I thought, oh, I can do this, you know, on my own. And it was just really, really hard. It was really hard. And I was getting very confused. And then I looked around for different groups that I might feel comfortable with, and I didn't find one for a very long time, actually. And so I carried on. And then eventually I found the forest tradition, and it was very clear that's where the resonance was. And it's almost like when I started to meet that, like a very powerful mirror of some things that I felt to be true within myself, and the strength of things that when I was on my own, I didn't have the confidence to trust. It was like suddenly I could trust that actually my being is bigger and deeper than just my habits, and I can explore it, and there is this possibility of awareness. And somehow the being with others who had trust in that helped me to trust in a way. And sometimes also they would very explicit, people around me would very explicitly say, you know, you're seeing yourself like that, and we don't see you as that limited. And that was really powerful. And then sometimes there's also the opposite that can happen in community where, you know, like I had a moment where I was feeling really sorry for myself, and I'd had a really difficult experience. And I was feeling really sorry for myself, and that I was a bit like a wounded dog or something, you know, that I'd had this thing that had been quite difficult, and everybody knew about it. And I was like, oh, and somebody said to me, well, yeah, you are like a wounded dog at the moment. It was like, oh, right then, you know, I don't have to be ashamed of that. So there can be a clarity as well sometimes of mirroring, where we can let go of our identity and go, this is what I am experiencing, and it's just an experience. So we open out. I don't have to be identified with it. I can say, this is what is happening. I feel shame, or I feel and that's real. As it's what I'm really experiencing, but it's not the only thing that I am. I don't have to cling to it. And sometimes spiritual friendship, community can help us past those very sticky points. So there's the very immediate sense of community where we can mirror each other, we can hold each other, we can help each other to trust. And there's also for me, one of the things I really, really enjoy exploring here at Eka Tulani is that we are actually in community with nature as well. So as I said on the first evening, the forest tradition very much emphasizes learning from nature. When for me, it's been a very important transition to start to feel how connected and how much we belong actually to nature. This body is nourished by the earth. I go to the toilet and I, you know, give back to the earth, and we compost it, and it goes on fruit trees, and they give us apples that then we eat, and it goes all round in the same cycle. It's like we belong to this earth. This is our community also. The birds are singing to us, you know, not us personally, but we're part of this bigger community of life. That we've become very, very, very disconnected from in modern consumerist society. And there's an awful lot of destruction that happens as a result of that. And so, and it brings to the first refuge of where the Buddha was sitting at the root of a tree. He touched the earth when he awoke. He recognized this community with nature. He said, recognize your impermanence. Recognize that you're not this individual separate self that you think you are. That's where your suffering lies. And so this refuge of leaning into community is, for me, it's like leaning back into nature, letting ourselves be nourished, and also letting ourselves care, letting ourselves respond from this place of, we're part of this cycle, so I honor these beings around me. I honor the earth I'm walking on, the water I'm drinking. And this just, it resets our whole being. So it was my birthday last month, and my partner bought me this Buddha with like these big ornate ears. It's a tiny little Buddha with these huge big ornate ears. I think it's Indonesian or something. And I really love it because it's, for me, these big ornate kind of little, it's got little fiery things coming out of its ears, and, you know, and it's like, and it symbolizes this listening into and tuning into the biggerness, the other realms, you know, the trees, the birds, the insects, the who knows what in the it's like we're part of this biggerness, this bigger community, and we've become very disconnected. And how incredibly powerful it is to have the simpleness of heart and humbleness, I don't know how to say that differently, the capacity to let ourselves have our place but not be superior, to go, I belong to this bigger community. Let me learn, let me flow, let me honor. So this for me is like, it's like the breathing in and out with community, where we can receive support and we also give back. And this nourishes our practice very powerfully, can do. And that we're not alone. So much of our suffering comes from feeling isolated, feeling alone, and tuning into Sangha in terms of the immediate Sangha. We can choose to reach out to a teacher or a spiritual friend to find out that we're not alone. We can choose to sit at the root of a tree and let the tree support us. We're not alone. The earth holds us. And that we also, all the beings who've gone before us spiritually in our family, it's like we're all connected. And so somehow this mysterious journey that's, it's part of that bigger picture. And that can be very, very supportive when we start to tune into it. So it's not to say we have to take all of that on all at once. They're just avenues to explore or to start to taste into. As a way of starting to notice that image of the tower, where are we choosing to window, or can we have the courage and the trust in ourselves to start to turn around and go, oh, what else is here? And that's a very liberating movement, and it's a very profound movement, because when we start to do that, we are really learning that we're not trapped in who we think we are. And it isn't necessarily about creating something different or getting rid of this suffering or that something, it's suffering. It's just, can we deepen? Can we kind of settle into the bigger ocean of who we are, so that our perspective on the waves becomes a little bit different? So the waves might still be there, but they're not all consuming. They don't carry us off and determine our life. We have choice, actually, in this coming back to awareness, coming back to the body, coming back to the community that we're part of, however we sense that. And for me, what's really, I know I've said it, but it is really important to tune into this sense of it's not so far away. So that which is present within us is right here. It's right here. It will be here when we get up from this session and we put one foot in front of the other. We open the door. If we notice our presence, it's right here. Or all the qualities the Dharma can point us to, our curiosity, our wisdom, our kindness, our very deep capacity for listening and response is actually right here. And our community, however we sense that, whether it's with other human beings, whether it's with the trees, whether there's a questioning around, well, what's my, you know, maybe I need to be feeling out more what's real in my own heart, and how does that fit with community? All of those questions, they're part of our practice and valid. And so this question, or this sense of taking refuge, of learning to listen deeply within and learning to choose where we take shelter when we're meeting what's arising within us, this is it's a very immediate thing in practice. It brings practice right here to this moment. So I realize I've said quite a lot now. And it is quite a broad theme that I've been exploring, but it feels like there's something about this noticing we can choose where we take shelter, which is really important, and it's really important in practice. And just this tone of exploring, of trusting ourselves in practice is really important. And that these supports are kind of always already here, not so far away. This feels quite, for me, it feels quite alive as to how we can sense into practice. And that's what I really wanted to encourage, this sense of how do we tune in, and where can we start to explore, to rest into in our practice. So if there's anything helpful, please take it with you in your heart. And if anything was really not helpful, just let it go on the wind. And if you have questions, we'll make a time for questions probably tomorrow. So please feel free to let your heart go wild in questioning and bring anything that comes along. And thank you for your listening. And Anu has very, very kindly sent Noon and I a French timetable because I got very confused when I said to you 11 a.m. this morning. So we'll get the time right this evening and we'll meet you at 8:15 p.m. Finnish time, 7:15 p.m. French time. For probably some meditation and some chanting. So, yeah. And in the meantime, there's the meditation hall. And Anu, I don't know if you want to say anything.
I don't know if I have anything particular to say, just that the next peer-led sitting is at 6:45 and we'll update the website with the groups for tomorrow and for the rest of the week later today. So,
okay, thank you. Thank you very much for doing that, Anu.
Thank you.
Thank you.